Good evening, everyone, and welcome to eBible Fellowship's Bible study in the book of 1 Samuel. And tonight, we'll have our third Bible study in Samuel. I'm going to read from verse 2 of 1 Samuel chapter 1. And he had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah, and the name of the other, Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto Jehovah of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of Jehovah, were there. And when the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and her daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah. But Jehovah had shut up her womb, and her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because Jehovah had shut up her womb. And as he did so year by year, when she went up to the house of Jehovah, so she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. Then said Elkanah, her husband, to her, Hannah, why weepest thou? And why eatest thou not? And why is thy heart grieved? Am not I better to thee than 10 sons? And I'll stop reading there. Now, we saw in our last study that Elkanah, with his two wives, which we can't really say that was common in the Bible, but it's actually not that uncommon either, because we do find several instances of people who had multiple wives and even true believers. But God is setting up a spiritual picture here with Elkanah. Elkanah is a figure and a type of Christ himself, or of God himself, who has two wives. God, through his word, the law of God, is married to mankind, and mankind is very adulterous in that relationship, and it will be the law of God as the angry husband that that rises up to condemn the adulterous wife, all of the unsaved people that have broken the law of God, that have transgressed the commandments of the Bible. But God is married to another, Romans 7 tells us, or Christ is married to another. We, by God's grace, become dead to the law through the body of Christ. Though, that is, those that God has elected to salvation. And we enter into a marriage relationship with Christ that is based on the mercy and the grace of God. And that's why Hannah's name means gracious and merciful and favor, where Peninnah's name would most closely relate to rubies. And we saw in the Proverbs that a virtuous woman's price is far above rubies. And Hannah is the virtuous woman. She's representing the elect. Peninnah, well, she is also legitimately Elkanah's wife. Elkanah has feelings for her. He has respect for her. He gives her and her children portions, but he loves Hannah. And so even though God has respect for those created in his image, still there's a different relationship between God and those that he has redeemed, those that he has saved and purchased, and the rest of mankind. Well, also we see that Hannah had no children, but Peninnah had children. And we'll have a chance to talk more about that later, as Hannah will give birth to a son a little later on. So let's move on here to verse 3. And this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto Jehovah. The English word yearly, if we look at the Hebrew, the literal Hebrew, it's actually literally days to days. He goes up at a regular time, and it is yearly, actually. Later on in the same chapter, the word for year by year or something that's done annually is used. So this is accurate in the sense that it's correct that there was a sacrifice that was held in Shiloh yearly. Now, we're not sure exactly which of the feasts this is, because God commanded in the Pentateuch, in the five books that the Lord had used Moses to write, that the males of Israel were to gather three times in the year for the Feast of the Passover, for First Fruits or Pentecost, and for the Feast of Ingathering or Tabernacles. And God stresses that this would be done in a place that he would choose. Now, we're very familiar with Jerusalem, and later on, that will be the holy city and the central place of worship for Israel. But when Israel entered into the land of Canaan, coming out of their 40-year wilderness sojourn, they did not worship in Jerusalem. For 40 years, or for much of that time, the Ark of the Covenant was in a tent, as God instructed Moses to build a tabernacle. And that tabernacle was set up and then broken down to be moved constantly throughout the 40-year sojourn. And then they entered into the land of Canaan. Finally, they crossed over Jordan. And we find in Joshua chapter 18, in verse 1, it says, "And the whole congregation of the children of Israel assembled together at Shiloh, and set up the tabernacle of the congregation there, and the land was subdued before them." So here God is showing us that after they did overcome the land, when the conquest of Canaan was complete, they picked a city, and it was Shiloh, to establish the tabernacle of the Lord. This is where the people would come, the place that God would choose in order for them to worship. This is what the Lord had said in Deuteronomy chapter 12, in verse 10, and the following verses. "But when ye go over Jordan, and dwell in the land which Jehovah your God giveth you to inherit, and when he giveth you rest from all your enemies," and excuse me, I lost my place. "He giveth you rest from all your enemies round about, so that ye dwell in safety. Then there shall be a place which Jehovah your God shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. Thither shall ye bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes, and the heave offering of your hand, and all your choice vows which ye vow unto Jehovah. And ye shall rejoice before Jehovah your God, ye and your sons and your daughters and your men servants and your maid servants and the Levite that is within your gates, for as much as he has no partner inheritance with you. Take heed to thyself that thou offer not thy burnt offerings in every place that thou seest, But in the place which Jehovah shall choose in one of thy tribes, there thou shalt offer thy burnt offerings, and there thou shalt do all that I command thee. So in the year 1407 B.C., following 40 years in the wilderness, Israel crossed Jordan and entered into the promised land of Canaan, and then did battle for some time. And when the battle was complete, they set up the tabernacle in Shiloh. Now, Shiloh, as far as I can tell, was in or near the tribe of Ephraim. And that's why Elkanah, when he comes from Mount Ephraim, probably did not have very far to travel in order to reach Shiloh. And God also tells us, as we read in the book of Judges, he tells us in Judges chapter 21 that there was a feast in Shiloh. It says in verse 12, and they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead 400 young virgins that had known no man by lying with any male, and they brought them unto the camp to Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. Now, the occasion here in Judges 21 is that the tribe of Benjamin has almost been wiped out, except for, I think, 600 men of Benjamin. And so after recognizing that the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead did not go to fight Benjamin, they determined to get wives for the men that remained in order that the tribe of Benjamin not be wiped out. And they found 400 wives for these Benjamites, and they brought them to Shiloh. Then it says in verse 13, and the whole congregation sent some to speak to the children of Benjamin that were in the rock Rimmon and call peaceably unto them. Now, down in verse 19, then they said, behold, there is a feast of Jehovah in Shiloh yearly. And again, literally, that's the same construction as in 1 Samuel 1. Literally, it would be days to days. There is a feast of Jehovah in Shiloh yearly in a place which is on the north side of Bethel, on the east side of the highway that goeth up from Bethel to Shechem, and on the south of Labona. So that helps us place where Shiloh was located. Therefore, they commanded the children of Benjamin, saying, go and lie in wait in the vineyards, and see and behold, if the daughters of Shiloh come out to dance and dances, then come ye out of the vineyards, and catch you every man his wife of the daughters of Shiloh, and go to the land of Benjamin. They needed 200 more wives, so they captured 200 virgins of the daughters of Shiloh for the men of Benjamin. But we see here that there was a feast yearly, and this would have been one of the three major feasts, we can be sure of that the Lord would have required the males to attend. And I'm just not sure which of the three feasts is in view with Elkanah. All right. Now, there's one other thing that we should look at about Shiloh. In Judges 18 and verses 30 and 31, the children of Dan set up the graven image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, he and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. And they set them up Micah's graven image, which he made all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. So as we read of the terrible wickedness in the book of Judges and the falling away, God makes a point of letting us know that every man did that which was right in his own eyes. All the time, the Ark of the Covenant, the tabernacle or the house of God, was in Shiloh, and yet there was high places in other places in Israel. There were graven images. There were idolatrous practices taking place. And this is eventually why we'll see in 1 Samuel that God gives up the city of Shiloh to awful judgment. He tells us why, the Lord tells us why he will bring this judgment on Shiloh in Psalm 78, where it says in verse 56, "Yet they tempted and provoked the Most High God and kept not his testimonies, but turned back and dealt unfaithfully like their fathers. They were turned aside like a deceitful bow, for they provoked him to anger with their high places and moved him to jealousy with their graven images," just like we read of that graven image that was set up all the time the house of God was in Shiloh. When God heard this, Psalm 78:59 says, "He was wroth and greatly abhorred Israel, so that he forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent which he placed among men, and delivered his strength into captivity and his glory into the enemy's hand." Now, again, we'll have plenty of time later to discuss that and to see the spiritual meaning behind all that. But for now, we just need to recognize that 1 Samuel is a book that is really bringing the period of the judges to a close. And during the period of the judges, these hundreds of years from the entering into the land of Canaan to the time when Samuel will begin to judge, or the time when Shiloh it comes under the judgment of God, and Eli ends his judgeship in the year 1067 BC. There were several hundred years where men were not being faithful. And again, God would raise up enemies, and they would bring judgment on Israel due to their unfaithfulness. And Shiloh was a very significant place during these days of the judges. So 1 Samuel will bring the period of the judges to a close and will open up the period of the kings of Israel. We'll see Saul become the first king, Lord willing, if we were able to get that far in the study. 1 Samuel 1, verse 3, "And this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto Jehovah of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of Jehovah, were there." So, again, more names. We'll find again and again that there's all sorts of names in 1 Samuel. Of course, they're throughout the Bible. But these names have meaning. Eli possibly means upper or lofty. And I'm not exactly sure what God has in mind. Maybe it's related to pride. It could be. Hophni, his name means handful or both hands full. In one case, the name Hophni means fists, like someone has clenched their fists. I think A good way of understanding Hophni's name can be found in Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 6. And there it says, better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. That is a good description of Hophni. He was not content. He was not satisfied with the Lord's way. And him and his brother, they were very wicked men, and they tried to grab as much as they could during their period of ministry as priests in the house of the Lord. And so Hophni had his hands full, but not in a good way. Phinehas's name means mouth of the serpent. And sometimes Phinehas can be, that name can be for a true believer. We find instances of that. But in this case, it very accurately describes this man, this son of Eli, who really was unrestrained by his father and ended up involved in all sorts of evil dealings in spiritual matters. So these were the spiritual leaders of Israel in Shiloh, Eli and his two sons. And in this case, the number two is pointing to the caretakers of the gospel, literally, because these men had the charge of the Ark of the Covenant. They were the ones who had to safeguard the Ark. They're the ones, Hophni and Phinehas, that bring the Ark from Shiloh to the battle with the Philistines at the time when the Ark is taken by the Philistines and that most awful period of time as a result of Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, who should have been faithfully safeguarding the word of God or the ark, yet they were careless. And it really illustrates their unfaithfulness in spiritual matters. Okay, in verse 4, it says, and when the time was that Elkanah offered, the time literally is the day. The Hebrew word is the day. And when the day was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and her daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah, but Jehovah had shut up her womb. Now, portions seems to be related to a portion of a sacrifice that can be consumed. For instance, in Nehemiah chapter 8, it says in verse 10, then he said unto them, go your way, eat the fat, and drink the sweet, and send portions unto them for whom nothing is prepared. For this day is holy unto our Lord. Neither be ye sorry, for the joy of Jehovah is your strength. And verse 12, and all the people went their way to eat and drink and to send portions and to make great mirth, because they had understood the words. It's also the same word as in Esther in chapter 9. Verse 19, therefore the Jews of the villages that dwelt in the unwalled towns made the 14th day of the month Adar a day of gladness and feasting and a good day and of sending portions one to another. So the portions were somehow related to the offering, and at this time of year when they went to Shiloh, It was a part of the tradition, part of how they observe this feast that Elkanah gave to his one wife Peninnah portion and her children. And she had sons and daughters, so more than one son and more than one daughter. And they all got their portion. Every one of them received their portion. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion. Now that's, it's interesting that the translators translated the word here as worthy. Because as far as I can tell, nowhere else is it translated as worthy. It's actually a word that's translated often as anger or wrath, and it's just not a word that is translated as worthy. Now, in Jay Green's interlinear, he translates it as a double portion, this word also is translated as face or nostrils, as someone, when they get angry, their nostrils flare. But it's never translated as double. So Jay Green translates it as a word that it is never translated as anywhere in the King James. And I don't think we're permitted to do that. He took that a step too far. But the idea here is, I think we can understand when we look at one other place where the word portion is found in Psalm 16 and in verse 5. It says, Jehovah is the portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. So Jehovah is the portion. And here, Hannah is given a worthy portion, or a portion that somehow relates to the wrath of God. And then it says, for he loved Hannah. And I think that this would be related to the sacrifice, as this partaking of these portions is related to the sacrifice, and the sacrifices point spiritually to the sacrifice of Christ that he made for his people. And so that sacrifice, of which Hannah receives a worthy portion, because it indicates that the Lord sacrificed on her behalf, or as she typifies the true believers, it is pointing to his sacrifice for his people. I think that's what's in view. It goes on to say, but Jehovah had shut up her womb, and her adversary also provoked her sore for to make her fret, because Jehovah had shut up her womb. Now, nowhere else do we read that the Lord shut up someone's womb. We do find in a couple of places the Lord opened a woman's womb. That kind of language is used to describe Leah when she gives birth or when she conceives. The Lord opened her womb. And it's used to describe Rachel, Jacob's wife, when she finally was able to conceive after a period of barrenness. The Lord opened her womb. And since the Lord opened their wombs, that means that they had been shut up. And it just means that Hannah had no children. She was barren. And why was she barren? Well, because it was God's will. If God's the one who gives the blessing of children, and no one can force God, we wait on him for all things, and including children. We've come to the end of our time tonight. I'd like to thank you for joining with us, and please join with us again tomorrow night at the same time at 9 p.m. Eastern through 9:30. And now at this time, I'm going to say good night, and may the Lord's perfect will be done.